It's been roughly 6 months since Elon University students did not return to campus after spring break due to the coronavirus pandemic. Tomorrow, with the pandemic still in our midst, it will be 1 month of resuming in-person classes for the fall semester. This is ENN Radio, a weekly podcast from Elon News Network bringing you the story behind the headlines. I'm Anna Terry. This week on ENN Radio, we are doing a coronavirus roundup, talking about the updates to the university's ventilation system, the random testing process, quarantining, and the repercussions for students who fail to meet mass gathering limitations.
I am joined with Emery Eisner, a reporter for ENN. Thank you for joining me, Emery. How are you?
I'm doing well this morning. Thank you for having me.
Now, in your story this week, you focused on the recent alterations Elon's physical plant made to the university's ventilation system. Can you explain exactly what these changes are and why they were made?
Yeah. So, physical plant went in over the summer, and they assessed, you know, each of the university's individual buildings, and there are about 200 of them. And each building has its own unique heating, ventilation, and air conditioning system. So they went in and maximized the amount of airflow coming through the vents while maintaining a 40 to 60% humidity in each building, because that, according to a recent study in the Annual Review of Virology, is sort of ideal for limiting the spread of respiratory viruses.
Mm-hmm. And how effective are these updates made to the ventilation system in preventing the spread of the virus?
So the assistant vice president of physical plant, Tom Flood, wrote me a statement where he talked about the reasons why they made these changes, and that was to mitigate the spread of the virus, to get greater airflow because it is a respiratory virus. But I did also talk to a doctor with Cone Health's Center for Infectious Disease, and he said that because the coronavirus is spread through droplets rather than aerosols, that basically just means that it doesn't really hang out in the air for very long. And so while it's nice to have greater airflow, it's not quite as effective as something like wearing your mask all the time or social distancing.
Now, because droplets are seen as having a higher transmission rate of the virus, what precautions can community members take to help mitigate these risks?
Yeah, so the doctor that I spoke to, Dr. Jeffrey Hatcher, he said that wearing your mask all the time, whenever you're around people, as soon as you step out of your own room, essentially, and social distancing, especially when those things are in combination, are a really effective way of mitigating the spread of the virus.
This epidemic, you know, good social distancing, wearing a mask all the time if you're out of your space, washing your hands all the time. Those are really the most important things. And being in classrooms, it's really incumbent on the people who are in those classrooms to do a good job of social distancing when they're in those enclosed spaces. So that's certainly very difficult when you're in college. That's probably not, social distancing isn't probably the highest thing on your agenda.
When I spoke to Tom Flood, he said the same thing. Everybody that you talk to will say the same thing. Just mask up, keep your mask on when you're talking to other people that you don't live directly with. And, you know, don't take it off.
And there have been consequences for not following coronavirus guidelines. Students who are found hosting mass gatherings are suspended and removed from campus, while those who attend mass gatherings are put on probation. News director Jack Norcross gives us the latest.
As we know, is that there's already been 27 students who have or are facing conduct charges for hosting these larger gatherings that exceed these limits. And on top of that, those are the people who are hosting the gatherings. And on top of that, there are upwards of 74 students who have faced or are facing conduct charges for attending such a mass gathering. So before, right, there wouldn't really even be a question of hosting, you know, the numbers of people off campus. You know, there may be concerns about noise and everything, but now the school, to really try and limit the virus and to discourage people from having these gatherings, they're working with the town, they are working with the community to really kind of hold all students accountable.
This semester, Elon has shifted some of their dining and classroom experiences to an outdoor settings in hopes to contain the spread of the virus. The school built 10 tents around campus where students can be seen in class or eating outside. Some teachers are even holding their classes under the oaks, making use of towels and lawn chairs for seating.
Considering the fact that high levels of circulation decrease the likelihood for COVID-19 to spread, can the virus be spread outdoors?
Right, so this is something else that Hatcher told me. People generally consider the outdoors to be a good place for trying to sort of mitigate the spread of the virus because there's greater airflow, there are UV rays coming down, which are all helpful, but the spread of the virus can still continue when you're outside if you're not social distancing and you don't have your mask on.
What we, you know, the way we think about being outdoors, or the way I think about it, is that there are things that are going on outdoors that are protective for you. There's lots of great air circulation. There's UV light. And so you don't have that really as much in people who are in classrooms. So those folks we tend to think about those spaces as being a little more conducive to spread. It's not to say that you can't spread the infection in people who are outdoors, right? So again, close contact with folks who aren't wearing masks. We just think about it as a little bit less common.
With this in mind, would opening windows in classrooms be beneficial in mitigating the spread of the virus?
Right, so it might make you more comfortable to have that greater airflow going on, but what Flood told me from Physical Plant is that from that perspective, given the greater airflow going on and the maintenance of the humidity levels in each building, it's not quite as beneficial for the actual buildings to keep windows open for a longer amount of time because that can contribute to mold growth, which is bad for your health in a different way.
Mm-hmm. Thank you for joining me, Emery.
Thank you for having me.
In efforts to prevent the spread of COVID-19 through the university, groups of student and faculty members are being selected for random testing each week. I talked to Grace Terry, managing editor of The Pendulum, to hear more about the process.
So students who are selected will receive an email from Jeff Stein, who is the chair of the Ready and Resilient Committee, that's labeled urgent, you've been selected from random COVID testing. And then from there, you go into the email and log into an account, and select a time down to the minute in the alumni gym.
Once at the testing site, students take a PCR test using a nasal swab. If a faculty or staff member is randomly selected, they complete a mail-in test collection kit at home. Currently, there have been 4 weeks of random testing dating from August 19th to September 9th. Out of the 1,500 university members who have been tested so far, only 4 have received results that have come back as positive for the virus. Students who test positive for the virus are required to quarantine. Reporter Miranda Ferrante gave me more information on how the university is handling students who test positive for the virus or might have been exposed.
Quarantine students fit into one of 3 categories, according to Vice President Janilyn Patterson for Student Life: COVID-positive students, symptomatic students awaiting testing, and close contacts of people with a confirmed case. Patterson said the term quarantine is generally used to describe the first group of students, those who have tested positive for COVID-19. Students who fall into this category are placed in isolation for a period of time prescribed by the CDC. According to Patterson, symptomatic students and close contacts with transportation are tested at one of the off-campus testing sites, such as the Alamance County Health Department. If a symptomatic or close contact student does not have transportation, they can be tested on campus at Student Health Services. But regardless of any test result, students who are close contacts will complete the full 14 days of quarantine because that's the incubation period for the coronavirus. Regardless of any test result, students who are close contacts will complete the full 14 days of quarantine because that's the incubation period for the coronavirus.
That's it for this week's episode of ENN Radio. For the latest on coronavirus, visit our website at elonnewsnetwork.com. Subscribe to ENN Radio on Spotify and Apple Podcasts, and follow us on social media at Elon News Network.